Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. I'm David Cruz in for Brian for the next couple of days. Good morning. Thanks for listening. This week, Time magazine cover features the surprisingly optimistic cover headline, How to Cure Cancer. The cover story reports that impressive strides are being made towards a cure for a variety of cancers, and that those cures are coming in record times, aided by unprecedented financial investments from the entertainment industry. So is this the beginning of the end of cancer as we know it? Bill Saporito is an assistant managing editor at Time. He wrote the cover story, and he is himself a cancer survivor. Bill, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
I hope this isn't a dumb question to start us off, but I think it'll help me understand anyway why some of what you report in your piece is so significant. What exactly is cancer?
Well, cancer is largely genetic. So there are mutations that are involved in so many cancers. And, you know, basically it's just cells reproducing and reproducing because something's gone wrong in the wiring, so to speak.
Right.
It comes in so many different forms. And it could be caused by, radiation, chemicals, whatever. I mean, environmental things as well as unknowables, we'll say, just
right.
Mutations.
You write that only in the last 3 years has medical science come to comprehend the astonishing biology of cancer. You quote an MIT scientist as saying, this disease is much more complex than we'd been treating it, and the complexity is stunning. I was a little stunned to hear that from a scientist. Did we not know this to be the case?
And a Nobel-winning scientist, to be exact.
Yeah.
You know, the genetic origins of cancer have been known from the 80s, but only in the last 3 years when all the advances in sequencing have been made. Remember, it took about a decade and like $3.5 billion to do the first sequencing. Now you can do it in a couple of hours for a couple of thousands of dollars. So it's in these last 3 years that these tools have become available to scientists that they've really begun to understand the complexity of tumors.
So it should go without saying, and it's worth repeating, I guess, that cancer is a single disease. It's not a single disease, but hundreds, maybe thousands, right?
Well, they're talking about how it may be individual, right? Clearly, there are broad themes, if you want, of cancer. And when we talk about lung cancer or breast cancer, but breast cancer itself could have hundreds of different types. And so this is where the research is looking now, looking at what mutations cause what cancers and what you can line up to undo the damage done by that mutation.
Right, and the commonality of mutations among a variety of cancers as well.
There are commonalities that scientists are working on, and this is one of the more promising areas. So if they find a mutation that you can then target with a drug, and we've already seen some of these in the market. Once you lock in on that mutation, then you look for a drug that could work to undo it.
Right.
That's really what the promise is here.
Before we get into some more of the details of the work that's going on, we should talk about the significant differences in how cancer research is being funded. An organization called Stand Up to Cancer is investing heavily in ambitious cancer cure projects. Who is SUTC, and what makes them so unique that they can be described as a game changer in the war on cancer?
Well, Stand Up to Cancer was organized by the entertainment industry, by a couple of producers, and the idea was that we were not making a lot of progress in cancer. And about 4 years ago, people like Sherry Lansing and Laura Ziskind got together, and they said, "This is and others too in this field said, this isn't working. Why aren't we making progress? And when you look at cancers like pancreatic and lung and brain, the survivability has not really improved in 40 years. I mean, it's just been very, very difficult to crack. And what they did, they said, well, how can we change the game? What are we going to do? And they came upon an idea that's sort of like Hollywood, the way Hollywood works itself. You come up with a project, you get the producers, directors, actors, et cetera, and you pull them together, and then, of course, you fund it lavishly, and you give it a time frame, and you let it go. So what they did was assemble a lot of money, more than $100 million, I think, in its first go-round, and said, we are going to pull together dream teams of researchers, and we're going to look around the country. We're going to assemble these teams from across institutions, from a variety of disciplines. Now, they solicited projects for this, so they got, you know, tons of applications for them. They've had a scientific team vet these projects, and then they funded them at a very high level.
When you talk about lavish funding, tell me, compare it. What would...
Okay, so a typical grant from the National Institute of Health, Institutes of Health, might be on the order of $500,000 to $1 million, say, and it goes to a principal investigator who will, you know, diligently go down that path of his or her grant. What StandUp said is, you know, let's think bigger, $8, $10, $15 million, and see what we can do in a limited period of time. We're going to give the researchers, let's say, $10 million. You've got 3 years to execute the project, and the goal is to get something in the market that can improve outcomes, that really moves the ball forward. And they also did, which is not done very often in the research community, is that every 6 months a review team came in and said, show me what you got.
Which is not something that normally happens, at least not at six-month intervals.
Not at all.
And not at all.
And the participants of these dream teams said that this was, you know, this is something new and different because, again, the scientific committee that Stand Up to Cancer had organized was very high level. It included people like Phil Sharp of MIT. I mean, they, you know, they really held these teams to their promises.
You write that sharing is not a recognized behavior for the grant hungry. I can see all kinds of territorial disputes between and among bioengineers and oncologists and geneticists and pathologists. How is StandUp able to get all these people working together?
I think it was difficult at first for some of these people to work together. There were – because remember, the NIH is funding grants. They call it the pay line is about 8%. So the vast majority of grant proposals don't get funded. And when you get one of these things, you, of course, want to get another one. So you husband the data. You don't share with anybody. Yeah. You really want to, you know, you want to publish and you want to also get the credit, too. So when you pull these high-level people from various institutions and, you know, it's from Dana-Farber, from MD Anderson, you know, it's from Memorial Sloan Kettering. I mean, these are very, very high-achieving people, and you put them together and say, now play nice, it's not necessarily that easy for them. There's another issue is that you have contracts that have to be adjusted.
Right.
And there's this whole issue of credit.
And intellectual property that comes out of that as well, no?
Yes, absolutely. All of these things were barriers that had to be cross to get this thing in motion. And it took a while, I think, for some of these groups to get going. It took them several months just to get the contractual stuff out of the way.
Not to mention when you get pharmaceutical companies involved, I mean, we're talking about patents and all of that kind of stuff.
Well, yes. So if you're a pharmaceutical company and you're investing, you know, a lot of money in a drug that you want to obviously make a lot of money on, you're not necessarily willing to get into a trial with another drug company, for instance. So there are issues there because One of the things these scientists are doing are looking for drug combinations. Now, there may be, I think there's something like 800 drugs in development right now that are targeting mutations. Some of them may work together, may work better in tandem. So this is what the scientists are looking for. But again, this is not the way that drug companies traditionally have produced their products. They want to do clinical trials. They want control. But now a few of them have agreed to work more cooperatively.
And right, you write about an instance where there was one instance where three different drug companies each had a piece of a cure, and then they worked together on it and got some results, yeah?
Well, yeah, this was, I think, Lou Cantley's project where it's called a P13K inhibitor. But he not only needed that from Novartis, he needed something called a PARP inhibitor from AstraZeneca. Now, neither drug was approved for cancer treatment. And so they, you know, how do you get these two companies to agree to donate or at least let the researcher use their drug for an unapproved use in a clinical trial?
How do you do that?
Well, that, you know, that took some doing. But I think what's convincing them is the work that's being done, the progress that is being made, that they're, you know, that they are getting cures in some cases. I wouldn't say maybe cures is too strong, but they're
treatments.
You know, they're developing some very effective treatments, and the promise is so large they sort of can't ignore it.
So they figure at the end, everybody who needs to make their money is going to make their money.
Well, this is the way it works. You're not going to have a therapy if you don't have a profit.
Right.
I mean, it's just not going to get into the market. So let's, you know, everyone acknowledges that. And the idea is, and how do we best make that work?
Yeah. So what kinds of advances are we seeing coming from some of these super teams? And on what cancers is the most progress being made?
Well, let's just talk about the most difficult cancer. You know, if you look at pancreatic cancer, for instance, there's a pancreatic team that has succeeded in extending life expectancy for the patients that it's worked on. And, you know, currently less than 25% of patients with advanced pancreatic cancer make it to 1 year. So that's how difficult this cancer has been. And they've been able to double that survival rate in some cases. And they've actually got a reversal of this very, very difficult cancer in a couple of cases, and that's never happened before. So, you know, when you talk to these scientists, they basically said that they've learned more about pancreatic cancer in the last couple of years than they ever knew before. Hmm. So, you know, this is a basis on which you make progress.
Paul is in New York City. Paul, welcome to the program. Paul, turn your radio down. Hi, Paul. Do you have a question?
Yes, yeah. I told the other person. Do you want to know the question?
No, I said, do you have a question?
Yes, I do. Are you asking what the question is?
Yes, go ahead with it.
Okay. So apparently there's this 15-year-old kid that found, I don't know, I think he got some money, but he was instrumental in finding this test for pancreatic cancer that identifies it in people in the earliest stages. And pancreatic cancer, the way it is now, people get symptoms, and then it's in very late stages, and most people die, you know, within a year. So I wonder if the guest knows about this test and where it stands.
Bill?
I'm not familiar with that test. I think one of the things that
can you come out of left field? Can you be someone who is not necessarily in the medical establishment and come up with an idea or proposal or something that can end up being funded by someone like Stand Up? Or is there an established route you need to go through?
Well, Stand Up itself is not an established route. So
right.
I think – and there are people out there who, for instance, have developed a venture capital model of drug development – to again, look for – they're out there looking for promising projects, and they will fund them, you know, fund the research and say, look, we don't want papers. We don't need to publish papers. We want products. We want therapies. And this is another model that I've written about. Multiple Myeloma Research Foundation, I think, is one of them, where they go hunting for people who can potentially produce products, and they hold them to that. You know, they're not interested in funding ongoing research. They want something they can bring to market.
Now, you wrote about that. You said in the stand-up effort, teams will be judged by patient outcomes, not by the number of research papers they publish. Has the priority been something else until now?
The priority for everyone is to cure cancer, but the way the research community has been established over the years with very small projects being funded by NIH and other areas, that one of the ways you get more funding is to publish your results. And of course, you do want to, you know, publish your results in peer-reviewed journals. But there's been more reward, or as much reward, we'll say, for publishing as there is for producing an actual therapy. So I think it's been self-generating in that you end up producing a lot of papers, but not necessarily a lot of work that can be useful. And what StandUp is doing is trying to break that cycle. And so are some of the other kind of venture-funded medical organizations to say, we want to fund stuff that we can bring – that will bring therapies into the market. We're not interested in publishing papers.
You're listening to WNYC AM and FM. I'm David Cruz in for Brian Lehr. Bill Saporito is with us. He is the assistant managing editor at Time. He wrote the cover story this week, The Conspiracy to End Cancer. Can you talk about what impact that technological advances, nanotechnology and the like, have had on the fight against cancer?
Well, let's look at what MD Anderson is doing. They just announced what they call a moonshot program. You know, they were very deliberate in using that, because when Kennedy announced his moonshot program, they knew it could be done. All right. They knew that they understood the physics.
Right.
Now they had to apply the engineering and get there. So what Anderson is doing is basically saying, we understand the physics of cancer now, and what we now have to do is apply the engineering. So, and part of that engineering is, for instance, using big data, all right? A lot of what is tied to genetic medicine is organizing data. Is if you're looking at 800 potential medicines, we'll say, that can affect mutations, there's massive crunching that has to go on. So you need a data platform under all of this.
Right.
Or as you collect all these sequenced tumors, what do you do with that? How can you best use that information? So you need a platform to organize all this data. So that's another area that they're working on.
You write that one team includes an entrepreneur in residence to help handle product launch issues that often come up with biotech startups. Fighting cancer is a multi-billion-dollar industry. Are the economics, and I mean the economics for pharmaceutical companies and holders of intellectual property, somehow going to be easier to sort out now?
I don't think so. Big Pharma has had a lot of reorganizing done in the last couple of years. They've really changed their R&D and actually taken some money out of it to try to be more efficient. The entrepreneur that I mentioned in the story was working with a device called a circulating tumor cell trap, which was developed by one of the dream teams. Mm. And they want to get this device out to, you know, as many cancer hospitals as they can. So what often occurs in young businesses is that you either run out of money or you really can't. It's called the valley of death among entrepreneurs is that you get a prototype, and then getting that prototype into production is where it actually falls apart. So what they were doing there is trying to get their prototype into something that was manufacturable at scale. And once they have that, then they can attract more money, which they did, in fact. That team eventually made an agreement with Johnson & Johnson to give J&J developmental rights.
And this is a product that's near the market, yes? A couple years away?
It's being used right now. Mm-hmm. Every tumor produces what are called circulating tumor cells that are kind of released into the bloodstream. And metastasis happens when these cells land somewhere else and start to grow. That's when cancer spreads. So what this team was doing was trying to trap these cells
before they settle.
Well, they were not going to get all of them, but to know that they exist, if you know they exist, if you know they're moving, you know, that can influence care and can also help with early detection. So they have created this device which can trap one blood cell out of a billion, which is, you know, pretty amazing piece of work.
They
had 3 years to do this. I think they've recently gotten some additional funding to extend their work, but it was a concerted effort with people who, you know, you needed bioengineers, you needed oncologists, you needed biostatisticians, you needed a diverse group of people, and this is where the team science is really happening.
You are a cancer survivor. Was your case helped by a super team? And you wrote your last line, I think, is, trust me, when you get diagnosed with cancer, you want as big a team as you can working for you.
No, mine was previous to this. But again, I think for people who, you know, are diagnosed with cancer, you know, it's a scary thing. You want to know, you know, that everyone's working for you.
Yeah.
But what got me to start writing about this was the fact that we didn't seem to be making the progress that I thought was being made. And in a lot of cases, we're using old line drugs. They're very destructive.
Yeah.
They, you know, the treatment itself kills a lot of patients. So there's a lot of work to be done. And, you know, and no one is saying it can be done in the next 24 months, but it's this sort of change in the research paradigm that has a lot of people very optimistic of what they can do now. Now, think about, we talk about Nixon announced the war on cancer in 1970-71, and one of the researchers said to me, he said, that would be like announcing a moonshot in 1820. There was just no way. They did not have the tools. And what these groups today have is they believe they have the tools that can really make the inroads that we've been talking about for 20 years.
All right. Bill Saporito is an assistant managing editor at Time. He wrote the cover story, The Conspiracy to End Cancer. Bill, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
David Cruz, in for Brian Lehr on WNYC. Coming up, the Jersey City Mayor's Race. First, incumbent Jeremiah Healey. Stay there.